You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, folks, Brian is the theologian slash activist. I didn't think those two went together sometimes. I guess
they do.
They can.
Didn't we just talk about
that? Oh, yeah, we did just talk about that. And best-selling author who helped start the emergent church movement. In his latest book, he identifies 10 key issues that will shape the next generation of Christianity and says that new approaches to issues such as sexuality, pluralism, biblical authority, questions about whether God is violent, why Jesus matters, and the future of the church will reform the Christian faith. You remember A New Kind of Christian? Boy, that book rocked a few people's boats. Well, here's another one, A New Kind of Christianity. Again, the questions that are transforming the faith. Joining us again for, I don't know, the third time is Brian McLaren. Brian, people are going to start to talk about us.
Great to be with you again, Drew.
How are you, sexy?
I don't know about that, but I'm doing fine. I'm glad to be home. I've been traveling. I was in Africa for a couple weeks, and then I was in Western Canada for a few days, and now I'm back in the east coast of the U.S. in Maryland, just outside of D.C. So happy to be home and getting a bit of rest.
Are you sick of it?
No, not at all.
Like, get a job on a farm somewhere and grow wheat or something. Are you? Come on, it's like got to be bashing your head against the wall or why? You know, people taking shots at you left, right, and center. Man.
Well, every once in a while I'll get up my courage and or let down my threshold of intelligence and go on Amazon and read some of the reviews people write, you know, and that does get a little bit depressing. Although in another way, you know, it'd be crazy, it would be surprising if a lot of that stuff didn't happen. I mean, people will respond predictably. And I suppose it's a little depressing that the response, some of the negative responses are so predictable, but the positive responses, you know, outweigh the negative a lot, and that keeps you going.
What's the most heretical thing you've said?
oh my goodness! It would depend on who you'd ask, but I'll tell you what I think really gets under people's skin. That I'm suggesting that God is not violent, and that the fact that Jesus was not violent is very, very significant in telling us something about God. I think people feel, wow, if that's true, that upsets a lot of apple carts.
We just had on our show, was it last week or the week before, Bruxy Cavey?
2 weeks ago.
And Dr. Greg Boyd, and they were talking about pacifism and all of this kumbaya, warm, fuzzy stuff. And are you suggesting the same kind of thing, that our God is not a violent God, even though this God is supposed to be the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and forever, and whatever that verse is? You know, the God of the Old Testament all of a sudden had a personality change?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is it really matters whether we believe that God, you know, what we believe about God's character really matters. And a whole lot of people have died because Christians believed that God was happy for Christians to kill them. And I think if we want to save some lives, we've got to wade into those deep waters. First, the deep waters of really thinking about what it means to talk about the character of God as being kind as opposed to cruel. And second, then how we deal with all those passages in the Bible, because, you know, anyone with two eyes can see there are a lot of passages in the Bible that portray God as not the kind of person you want to move in next door.
No.
So you know, these are very hot issues, no question about it.
Okay. Have you ever said anything, Brian, over your heretical years that you've looked back and you've gone, let me just give you an example. I used to do a lot of speaking when I was an associate pastor of a church in Australia, and I broke out the box of cassette tapes of my messages, a couple of months ago. And I started listening to them, and that was a bad move.
Oh boy, I can imagine.
You can imagine. What do you mean?
Well, sorry about that.
Gee,
I can imagine going back and listening to my own sermons from 20 years ago.
Oh,
let me
say
it that way.
Yeah.
My poor wife, what she had to listen to, you know, listening to me preach for all those years, and to whatever degree I got better, it was because she was ruthlessly honest with me in the beginning. But gosh, in terms of big shifts in thinking. I mean, I've changed my thinking on how I would interpret this or that Bible passage, you know, on, right. on a lot of small things. But it turns out there have been a couple of, small factual detail errors. I misidentified the author of a Beatles song.
You're going to hell just for that, you know?
Yeah, and you'd be surprised how passionate people are when they find some of those kinds of errors. But
there's nothing over the years that you could look back on and go, you know what, I'd like to recant that one.
I guess what I could say is I'm really glad that not everything I have thought has been put into print. there's a wonderful country singer, a folk singer in Indiana named Carrie Newcomer, and she has a great song called Don't Hit Send. I'm glad a lot of the emails and blog postings I've thought about writing or gotten have written, I'm glad I didn't hit send. Let's put it that way.
You know, okay, take us back 20 years ago, 30 years. I mean, you're pretty old. How far back can we go here?
Yeah, we can go back a long way.
Okay, all right. So back in the early days, did you have an inkling that you would be such a controversial religious leader?
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, I never planned on being a pastor. I wanted to be a high school English teacher, and then I wanted to be a college English teacher. And I love literature, and I like the idea of teaching. I like the idea of having my summers off. So that was really my plan. I ended up being part of this little group of people who planted a church, and still when we started the little church, I didn't expect that I'd become the pastor. And even when I left teaching to begin pastoring, I guess I wasn't thinking ahead, you know, I wasn't thinking this is my career. I certainly never thought I would end up writing. I didn't expect I'd write books or that my books would become, however you want to describe it, controversial, lightning rods, whatever.
Can you think of all the your detractors over the years? Is there one that stands out the most? No, you know, here's an unfair question. I'm going to ask it, but not really ask it. I'd like to know who really gets under your skin. I know you can't answer that. Well, maybe you could, but I don't know. But can you answer it?
I can answer it, but not so much with a name. But somebody said to me, I think this is a wise old saying, but I never heard it until a couple of years ago. Somebody said to me, it's not the voices of your enemies that will get you. It's the silence of your friends. And I would say what has gotten under my skin is the number of people who I know either agree with me or at least I'm very glad I'm raising issues, but are so cautious. They'll never stick their neck out.
Yeah.
And so their silence, in a way, ends up empowering some of the people who are, you know, irresponsible and kind of mean-spirited.
Yeah, you need to have someone that has your back.
Yeah, and I mean, thank God I do have a lot of good friends like that. But in terms of seeing a bigger sea change out there in the religious world, I just think it's the silence of the moderate majority and the degree to which the middle majority is afraid of the people on their right. You know, it's really interesting how much the fear of the meanest people keeps sort of the middle of the road people quiet.
Very well said. Because I find that they're, you know, I can hear voices from people on the right suggesting that no, it would be the other way around. But really, the bully factor seems to be strongest on the right.
Yeah, you know, in my experience, because I get. Take a few knocks from the secular left and then a lot of knocks from the religious right. What I would say you encounter in the right is mean-spiritedness, viciousness, arrogance, and sort of an arrogant naivete. I mean, they often have no idea how much they don't know, but they're so absolutely sure of themselves. But on the left, what you get is this sort of snobbery and this sort of elite snobbery. And you just think it's just painful for them to even have to talk to you, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So there's a good bit of ugliness on both extremes. And you know, the fact is, even if people are on an extreme left or extreme right, that doesn't mean you can't be civil. You know, civility ought to be able to work for people all across the spectrum. And the good news is, you do meet people across the spectrum who know how to have civil dialogue, and, yeah. and that's very refreshing.
I just had a caller before you came to our show, and thank you again for coming to our show, who I had to hang up on. It was 7 years, I think I've hung up on two, maybe three people, but I just had to because we ran out of time, and they just kept going. So if you're listening, sir, I don't remember your name, but if you're listening, please accept my apologies. I like nothing more than to banter incessantly about things I don't care about. Brian, you're just too lovey-dovey, and probably at the cost of doctrine.
That's what some folks say.
That was my Calvinistic impersonation. Did I do good?
No, you weren't nearly as combative as you needed to be to really pull that impersonation off.
Sorry, let me do that again. You are just too lovey at the cost of doctrine, you big fat jerk.
Okay, that's...
Is that better?
That's getting a little... You're going in the...
Baldy.
Okay, now you're going. Okay. Now you're going. But see, here's the irony. Isn't it funny? Let me talk about U.S. history, then we can talk about Canada. But isn't it funny?
The way it should be? Let's talk about the states first.
Let's talk about Canada first. But if you know, you think in U.S. history, you could be pro-slavery, you could be a white racist, and you could be an Orthodox Christian. In other words, as long as you didn't violate any of the key doctrines, what you thought about African Americans didn't matter. And of course, in both sides of the border, when you think about how the Native peoples were treated, the First Nations peoples were treated, again, you could have every kind of racism and bigotry, but as long as you held a couple of doctrinal essentials, you could be a member, not only a member of good standing, shoot, you could be a pastor and a leader in your church or denomination. That says to me that when we make these two watertight categories, one of love and the other of doctrine, we've already lost the game. We can't be able to create these hermetically sealed containers.
Brian McLaren on the phone with us. He has come out with another gem, folks. Make sure your knickers don't get knotted up too much in this one. A New Kind of Christianity, 10 Questions That Are Transforming the Faith. Why is sex still such a huge thing? Is it because we still don't have many nudist beaches here in North America?
Well, it's one of your problems in Canada. There just aren't enough beaches, but that's another story.
Yes, and we have to be fully clothed on our beaches. It's so stinking cold. No, because people have said over the years, like Europe, they're just not as hung up about sex stuff over there because, you know, they're topless on the beach. Tim, you have said that on the show, and it's come out of your mouth.
No, that's Australia, not America.
Oh, okay, well, West Europe. The sexual hang-ups we have here in the church. You've talked a lot about this in your book, Brian.
Well,
so what are the sex questions we need to ask?
Well, the one that's on the front burner for everybody are issues of homosexuality, and one of the questions I raise in the book is, why is it that we can disagree about pacifism versus just war, or we can disagree about free will versus predestination and stay in the same churches and denominations, but when it comes to how we interpret six verses about sexual orientation, you know, people, they can't just say, yeah, I respect so-and-so, we see this issue differently.
What's the answer?
I think, pardon me?
What's the answer to that question?
Well, I think there are a number of answers. One of the answers is that we don't realize the degree to which religious controversies are the tip of the iceberg for political conflicts. And this sort of culture wars, left versus right battle, what it does is it moves from issue to issue. If I can give you an example, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but in North America, both Canada and the United States, if we were to go back 150 years, the big issue was the Protestant-Catholic divide. Mm-hmm. And there was deep, this is almost forgotten in our history, on popular level of history.
Right, right.
But if you were a good Protestant, you hated, you know, the idea that more and more Catholics were immigrating. This was maybe a lot like the negative attitudes toward Muslim immigration or immigration from Latin America and so on today. And so that was the litmus test issue at the time. Were you soft on Catholics? You know, And the issue changes over time. So for a while, it was abortion, and then it sort of seemed that the issue shifted to gay marriage, and it'll probably shift to some other things. Lately, on my side of the border, it's been, are you a socialist or not? But I think that's one dimension of it. I think another dimension of it is that sexual issues in general, and especially homosexuality, becomes the tip of the iceberg for the deeper issue of how we interpret the Bible, how we apply the Bible, and it becomes a deeper issue for a rethinking of Christian anthropology. In other words, what is our view of what a human being really is? And so many of us were raised on what I call the ghost in the machine model, where our body is a machine and our soul is a ghost, and the ghost sort of inhabits the machine and then leaves. And that view of the human being is under deep assault. And sexuality becomes one of the arenas where it gets, where we fight the battle. But it's not just in the area of sexuality. You know, anyone who's had to deal with a relative with Alzheimer's disease or with senile dementia, or any of us who have friends or relatives or deal with it in our own lives, issues of mental illness, whether it's schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or whatever, we start to realize that the biology of us and the soul of us are a whole lot more intertwined than previously acknowledged. And that's a big shift that's have to deal with in the Christian faith.
Has Brian McLaren ever come really close to walking away from his faith?
If you were to distinguish between sort of Christian religious participation and spirituality, what I would say is I have really at times, you know, been fed up with my Christian religious connections. Interestingly, the reason they've been problematic for me is because I felt like they've really harmed my spirituality,
right,
and in a sense, my deeper sort of connection with God and the part of me that wants to, you know, be a Christ-like person. That's remained relatively intact, if not growing stronger through the years. But this is my big temptation. It's not to blow up at anybody. It's just to sort of quietly walk away somewhat disgusted. And that temptation does come up from time to time.
But you've never walked to the precipice of a spiritual divorce and looked over the edge a little bit, wondered whether you're going to jump or not?
I think I have gone through that through two somewhat extended periods in my life. One was when I was around 20, and the other when I was, just before I turned 40. I went through extended periods where all of these sort of feelings of the presence of God had vanished, and they vanished for such a long time that, you know, I just thought, I'm not gonna last, and I'm just, you know, it wasn't because I necessarily wanted to. I just thought I'm starting to feel dishonest when I talk about God, because any feeling of God's presence feels so distant. And you know, when Mother Teresa, when that came out from her journals, that Mother Teresa,
Dark Night of the Soul stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it really, you know, for some people that was disillusioning to them. To me, it just magnified my respect for her all the more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, how would you summarize the discontent of the underground church or the disenfranchised who, you know, we've heard say time and time again over the last number of years, I'm still okay with Jesus, I just don't want to go to church anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the cultural nuances of a stale institution, you know, you get chastised for talking about the Bride of Christ so poorly, of which I am part of, and somebody said the church is a whore, but she's my mother. Who said that? Augustine.
Yeah.
You know, man, I just... And about... Sorry, can we turn this into a bit of a therapy session for me, just for a moment here, please?
It's your show. It's
yeah,
your show,
thank too. You. A number of months ago, I said, on air, I said... I don't love Jesus. I think I loved him in the beginning when I became a Christian on a Friday night when I was sleep deprived at a Christian camp and they bought me an ice cream cone afterwards and all the girls hugged me. And maybe in the early days when I was caught up in the Keith Greenism of the whole thing. But, dude, it's been years, 30 years of crawling behind Jesus. A, I don't love guys. That's weird. And B, it's really hard to love an invisible guy.
Yeah.
So I don't think I love Jesus. What do you got to say about that?
Well, first of all, I think having the honesty to talk about how you feel about that is exactly the kind of thing that we need a big dose of. Because when people say they love Jesus, I think all of us at some period in our life, we ought to do a little scrutiny on that statement. We ought to, first of all, say, what do we mean by Jesus? Because, you know, what ends up happening is we upload a lot of our anxieties and hopes and dreams and fears and neuroses and all the rest. We upload them into this word Jesus. And sometimes when we say we love Jesus, what we really mean is, you know, I love my religious heritage. I love my grandparents. I love, you know, I love that building where I had all of those warm and cozy feelings.
I love the South.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I got a taste of this a couple years ago. I was in Denmark right after. Remember that big the Danish cartoon?
The cartoon stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Thing. I was talking to a Lutheran state church pastor there, and he told me that church attendance really spiked right after that because of all of these Danish people thinking, "Wow, we're in a culture war with Muslims. What religion are we? Oh, we're Lutheran? Okay, let's go to church." And,
wow.
And so, you know, rediscovering their religion was really connected to sort of circling the wagons when they felt under attack. So I think that part of it we need to scrutinize. And then the other part probably that needs some scrutiny is what we mean by the word love, because Jesus himself he said some quite provocative things about, you know, what it means to love him.
If you love me, you'll obey me. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And, dude, I suck at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the fact that you care probably, I am moving into pastoral mode here, Drew, but the fact that you care about sucking at it probably means something that's a good thing. But, again, you know, I'm less worried about you when you say that you care when you suck at it than I am of the people who think that they're really great at it and this makes them superior. You know, that's where I think we've got a real serious problem.
Well, they're just jerks and we all know it. On the phone, Brian McLaren, author of A New Kind of Christianity: The Questions That Are Transforming the Faith. Brian, many people, when I mention, "Oh, Brian is coming up on the show again," and they'll forward me links to articles and comments and things that I don't know if you've been misquoted or I'm sure you've been misquoted. But let's just put one card out on the table here.
Great.
Yeah, maybe not so. The whole is Jesus the only way, the exclusivity of Jesus. Can you clear that up for everybody once and for all? Because I'm sure you've cleared it up many times in the past, but my ears haven't heard it.
Yeah, okay, well, do you want the 10-second version or the 1-minute version?
No, let's do the 1 minute. It's my show.
Okay.
Let's do it.
The 1 minute version is this. People, well, first of all, let me just talk about, is Jesus the only way, as a conclusion drawn from John 14:6, where Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." In this book, New Kind of Christianity, I do a reading of that verse. And you know, one of the most basic things anybody learns in interpreting the Bible is you better see the context in which a statement comes. And the context for that verse has absolutely nothing to do with somebody saying, "What about people of other religions? What about Buddhists? What about Hindus? What about, you know, people who were born in the jungle and never heard about Jesus?" It has nothing to do with that at all. The context has to do with the disciples talking to Jesus, Jesus saying, "I am going somewhere, and you cannot come." And that ends up in this really fascinating and wide-ranging discussion to which Jesus' statement, to which it's a response. And then I suggest that that statement really reaches its pinnacle a couple of sentences later, when Jesus says, "Whoever has seen me has seen the Father." So what I always want to say to people is this: listen, after watching Jesus in the Gospel of John, interact with a Syrophoenician woman, interact with a woman caught in adultery, interact with this guy named Nicodemus, interact with a blind guy, confront religious hypocrites. After what you've seen of Jesus, do you think Jesus is the kind of person to say, I'm going to torture for eternity people who were so unlucky as not to have been born in the right family to learn about me? I mean, that just doesn't match with what you see about Jesus in the Gospel of John at all. So I, what I could say, and I've probably gone over my minute, is that to quote John 14:6 as an answer to a question about people of other religions is an adventure in missing the point.
Okay.
That's not what that verse is about.
Okay. That helped us understand the context of that verse, but people still want to hear from Brian McLaren's lips. If someone has not surrendered their life to Jesus, and they've heard about Jesus, are they done?
Again, I just think what I try to do in the book is I try to say the whole framework of asking who goes to heaven and who goes to hell, seeing everything in this heaven-hell game, I think is a misreading of the biblical narrative, and I think that whole paradigm has us in the wrong.
So are you saying you don't have a point of view because you just don't care anymore, or you do have a point of view, but to explain it concisely and have people not just blow up in their brains spiritually, it would take forever to explain what I'm trying to say. So I'm not going to say it. Because I don't think you've answered. Like, if you answered it, Brian, I'm confused, man.
Well, Drew, what I'd say is, first of all, it's a little bit like someone saying to you, have you stopped beating your wife yet? You know, the question makes assumptions that you don't want to affirm.
Right.
And so when people ask me, what about people of other religions, what I want to say is, well, what are the assumptions behind that question? If one of the assumptions is that the whole purpose of the Christian religion is to sort souls out between heaven and hell, I don't think that makes sense. I'm embarrassed to say this, but I don't think I think I was like 34, 35 years old before I realized that heaven and hell, going to heaven and hell after you die, is never mentioned once in the Old Testament. So the entire Hebrew Scriptures, the backdrop question for them is not, where do you go after you die?
No, but it wasn't mentioned in the Old Testament because the Old Testament was a chronicle of a particular nation, and they were God's favorite people. So were they not already kind of taken care of? So there was no point in getting into that?
Well, I suppose, someone might say that. But, for example, my assumption, because of my religious upbringing, was, why did the Jewish people do animal sacrifices? Well, it was to atone for their sins so that they wouldn't go to hell after they died. But that wasn't their assumption at all. It wasn't what they were thinking about. There are few facts as indisputable as that, in biblical studies.
Right.
That framework to me is so problematic. And then in that framework, I think we misinterpret Jesus, and then we end up with this whole focus on heaven and hell that I don't think was Jesus' focus at all.
Did Larry King ask you the question? Because he asks everybody that. If I don't believe in Jesus, am I going to hell? Did he ask you?
He didn't ask me that one, no. Although I was on his show only once and with several other people, and the only thing I can say, it was kind of interesting and fun and strange, but I got a nice call from his producer afterwards saying, Larry would like to have you on again, because he thought you really listened to him and you weren't just trying to spout your pre-digested ideas. So I thought, well, that was a nice feeling, although he never did call back.
One of the things I have always said about you to other people, when I'm gossiping about you, this is what I say. You and I and a bunch of people, we had sushi one time when you were up here, and we had some lovely discussions. And we all asked you about, well, how are you handling the stuff that, negative stuff that people are saying about you? And I keep calling you dude, sorry. I've been on that trip lately, Tim. I don't know why I've been saying dude
so much.
Yeah,
you're in good company. He called the leader of Opus Dei Canada dude as well.
Yes, I called the vicar of Opus Dei Canada. I called him dude. We were like, how do you handle this? And you were the most gracious cat I've ever seen respond to that kind of deal. If people were gnawing at me the way they gnaw at you, I don't know, man. I don't think I'd be as gracious. So that's why I like you. It's kind of like John Arnott from the Vineyard Church here, the Toronto Airport Christian Fellowship here in Toronto. I said to John one time, if you were a jerk, it'd be a lot easier to write your whole place off. But you are the nicest guy of the weirdest church I know. Anyway.
Well, I mean, part of this is, you know, you get some experience. You're forced to learn how to deal with some of this stuff just because necessity requires it of you. But also, I do also think it flows from what I believe. You know, if you go into the world seeing there's this one group of people who are the insiders, the saved, the favored, the elect, the chosen, and everybody else is outsiders, I in a sense, your spiritual enemy, it does send you into the world with a somewhat combative frame of reference. But if you believe that everybody is God's creation and everybody is loved by God and God is working with everybody, and everybody's story, you know, is interwoven with God's grace and God's love, that God is inescapable, if you believe that, I think you're a little less tense.
Yeah,
when you interact with other people.
Look, I default to, I can't think as deeply as you guys do, and you and some other smart. I'm just not that sharp. So this is my default. This is, if someone says to me, like I've read articles out there that have said, Drew Marshall likes Brian McLaren, so Drew Marshall is a jerk, or he's a heretic, or he's screwed up spiritually. I don't know. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And if someone makes that second degree, I don't know what the degree of separate. What's that? What am I trying to say?
Yeah,
if someone, you just said
if someone, if someone writes me off because I've had you on my show, that's an the math there is easy. They're the jerk. That is just ridiculous. Now I still got to find a way to love them, and that's what I'm saying right from the beginning. I have a hard time with that stuff.
This to me is one of the big challenges that you know, people have to face in religious communities. And I think this is true in Judaism, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism. It's just a fact. It's a fact of religious sociology, if I can say it that way.
Right.
The people who scare you, the people who are mean, the people who threaten you, the people who, are vicious, it seems to me they are not the people we should reward with deference.
Yeah.
And nor should we, you know, respond in kind, because that just creates more, you know, pumps more toxins into the system. But I do think that we should stop being afraid of people who only stay in power because of their ability to make people be afraid.
Yeah, there was an interesting phenomenon when Piper decided to invite Rick Warren to his conference, and all of Piper's cronies kind of flipped on him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't get this whole scene. It's like, the immaturity factor in the Jesus scene drives me insane. I just thought.
Yeah, although if it's any encouragement, you know, if we were Muslims, we'd have Muslim stories to tell, and if we were Jewish, we'd have Jewish stories.
But we should be different, man.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's part of the humility that Christians have to gain by facing these realities. Maybe part of that humility is to say, you know what? We're all human beings. Yeah. And in a funny way, the way you become different, when everybody thinks they're superior, the way you become different is when you stop claiming superiority.
Yeah, very well said. Folks, Brian McLaren is who we've been chatting to. A New Kind of Christianity is his latest and greatest. Can we find a way to address sexuality without fighting about it? Is God violent? Who is Jesus and why is he important? How should followers of Jesus relate to people of other religions? And many other questions he tackles in this latest book of his. Brian, thanks, mate. I appreciate your heart. I really do.
Well, it's always good to be with you. Keep up the good work, and I hope we'll talk again down the road.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Brian McLaren. Certainly go to our website to find out about his website and get the book. We're late. We're moving along. Dr. John Stackhouse will be up next, theologian and author. He's a guy that doesn't mince words. And then the drummer and founding member of Kansas, Phil Ehart, of course, playing drums in the background on this song. And then Mark Schultz joins us in studio, Dove Award-winning singer-songwriter at the end of the show. We'll be right back.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
He's been a guest on CBC's Test the Nation and the Global Comedy Fest in Vancouver.
He's the first Christian radio host invited to speak at the Canadian Association of Broadcasters annual conference.
He's an improv and stand-up comedy student at Second City in Toronto.
He paid an atheist and a pagan to go to church.
And he's known simply as the God Guy on Q107 in Calgary.
After more than 7 years, Drew Marshall is known as the Howard Stern of Christian radio because of his brutal honesty and the fact that he'll interview people others won't.
Like the high priest of the Church of Satan or the leader of Canada's polygamous colony.
He's also interviewed everyone from blues icon B.B. King to television icon Kathy Lee Gifford, from shock rocker Alice Cooper to the godfather of soul James Brown.
And two of Canada's most recognized faces, Don Cherry and Stephen Harper.
Unpredictable.
Provocative.
Genuine.
To book Drew Marshall as a guest speaker or master of ceremonies, go to drewmarshall.ca.